Podcast Central,
your home for podcast needs.
Sponsored by George Collision Repair. You get in a wreck, we can fix it.
Welcome to the podcast with your host, the one, the only, W.I.L. Will Lasseter! What's going on, guys? Welcome to the podcast where we're going to be talking about Education 280. I think I might have been calling this class Education 290 for a really long time, but it's actually Education 280, so don't get it confused. But essentially what we're going to be doing here is going over everything we've learned about technology when it comes to education and teaching. So essentially what I'm going to do to format this is I'm going to go through my different modules, go through a couple different things I learned, and kind of discuss the developments that I've made in my own personal journey when it comes to education, teaching, and how it relates to technology, and how technology relates to education, teaching, and all that good stuff. I'm kind of talking myself in circles here. So guys, let's get into it. First things first, I want to talk about the idea of technology when it comes to education, right? Because technology, when it comes to teaching, has been around for a very long time. It's not just a new thing since iPhones. It's been a thing since there's been technology, right? At one point, educational technology might have just been, look, there's computers now, okay? Or maybe, look, there's a calculator, okay? Maybe you go, what do you call those things? A projector, right? Projector. That's educational technology. But as technology develops, so does education and teaching, technological education develops, right? And so it's become this thing that might have just related to basic computer operations, right? Things that you use in education. And it's turned into, right, a giant, all-encompassing, important part of education. It's not just a fun little extra thing. It's kind of what education is based around today. Now, obviously, there's a lot of core parts of teaching education that have been around forever that stay the same, but a lot of things have to develop, especially because our society is changing, and which will bring me into... this might not be the first module, but... No, it is the first module. The idea of 21st century learning, and that's what some people call it. There's other standards and stuff. There's the ISTE standards, and there's the Partnership for 21st Century Learning, but the essential idea is that as technology grows, right, and technology becomes this thing that we're staring at everywhere we go, right, you can't get a job anymore unless you put on your resume, I know how to use Excel spreadsheets, right? But what is an Excel spreadsheet? You know, for a long time, you probably didn't need to know that, but now, you know, you got to be able to work a computer, right? You got to be able to create these things, and it involves all these different skills, these skills of creation, these skills of understanding how software works, how programs work, how logic works, right? Because a lot of this stuff is based on logic, you know, A plus B equals C, or whatever, and so forth. And so, kids, students, especially, to be successful now, they have to know these things, right? And so as teachers, as educators, it's a core part of what we're doing that we're not only just teaching history, political science, mathematics, English, but we're taking these things and pointing them in a direction that faces at society, right? It's kind of an applied learning sort of idea with education, right? You don't want to just teach kids how to have a really high Lexile level. You want to teach them how to use their Lexile level to interpret different articles and maybe whether they're true or fake or what makes a article bias or whatever, right? And that's applied learning. We're applying that to the 21st century world. That's what's going to help kids get jobs. That's what's going to help people survive in our current society, because you have to have technology in our society. So, that's kind of what the first module was about, right? Module 1, Intro to EdTech and Technology Integration. Okay, we were kind of discussing, hey, technology's here. Why does it matter in education, right? Because we've taken a lot of education classes probably up till now, and now this is the part where we look at it through the lens of education or through the lens of technology, which is incredibly important because of, like I said, they have these standards because a lot of school districts and a lot of states expect you to teach kids in a way where they can take this learning in an applied direction and survive in our world, which is completely surrounded by technology. So there's a super complex way of saying that. And how long is this podcast going to be, you might ask? Maybe a very long time, maybe not a very long time. Is my instructor professor, Dr. Pragman, going to listen to the whole thing? I don't know. And that's up to him. And that's up to the other listeners if you want to follow me all the way through here, because there's a chance this could be 45 minutes long, an hour and a half long, or maybe 15. Okay? So now I'm basically talking myself in circles again, and we're going to go on to module number two. Now, well, actually, let me check, make sure. Module number one, yeah, Partnership for 21st Century Learning. That's when we went over the ISTE standards and challenges and opportunities. Basically, you know, what role do phones play in the school, right? Because everyone's got phones now, and do we force kids to lock them in a box? Do we use them in all the classrooms? Do we let them text while we're doing while you're talking to them? Are you gonna let them text? You know, I mean, that might be a question you have to think about. And personally, I mean, I don't see that much of a problem with kids having their technology, because it's kind of, it doesn't matter if they have their technology or don't have their technology, right? Because if a kid's got a phone and he's texting somebody and they're texting them back, and then you take the phone away, they're not all of a sudden enthralled by your math class, you know? They're still in the mindset of that phone, and I don't know if it makes a huge difference or not, forcing them to not have the technology. And I don't know if it's a reasonable expectation to think that a kid should always be enthralled when they're in every single class 5 days a week when they're going to school, right? And so I don't know. I think I'm pretty undecided right there, but I more lean towards the way of, I don't think it's that big of a deal, and I don't think that necessarily just because a kid is looking up at you and not saying anything that they're actually paying attention to you, right? One of the core parts of this class is that if you're communicating, or at least this is most education classes at MCC, is that if you're communicating, right, and you're reading and talking and writing in the class, then you're learning. And I think that's a pretty good judgment. Anyways, moving on to module number two, the header here is learning theories, technology theories, and effective online discussions. And let me see what we learned here. I'm going to start here. There was an interesting article that we read about called Silicon Valley Came to Kansas Schools, and it essentially, I think a lot of the discussion in this module was about how our schools how much should schools embrace this, like, alternative view to learning where a kid sits down and is on the computer and is, like, essentially just reading stuff and then practicing it, and then the program says this student is proficient and then they move on. How effective is that? And we had some discussions. We also talked about how to improve the quality of online discussions and things like that. And I think that what I came to understand, right, or at least whenever I was thinking about this, is that I don't know if students are, it's not, I don't think it's the same thing when a kid sits down and does sort of the online solo learning on a computer as it is whenever a kid is in a classroom doing certain things. And if we want to build the 21st century learning and prove that our kids are going to be able to success with the ISTE standards, right? And that they have this sort of applied learning, that they learn these things and they can apply them in society and get jobs and be successful and you know, figure out what news is real and fake and what, you know, where biases lie and all these things. I don't think that that's being practiced very much whenever a kid is sitting solo on a computer and just looking at the screen and reading something, then practicing it and then being successful. Because a big thing with reading, right, I think this needs to be said, is that whenever a person by themselves reads something and then takes a test, the test will not always guarantee that the student has 100% gained a complete understanding of 100% of the information that they read, right? That's pretty much, that's not going to happen. So what we do, what's important about kids like completely understanding things and understanding why we're learning them, right? Like say there's a, say like with this article, right? With Silicon Valley came to Kansas schools. I read it, you know, how much of it did I completely get, right? How much of it stuck to my mind? I don't know. Probably not. I'm ADHD a little bit, and not everything that I read absorbs into my head. I have read a book before, not been sure which page I was on, go 20 pages before where I actually was at, read the 20 pages and had no idea I had read them before, right? And what is that? Maybe that's not for everybody, but I know that happens to me, which means it probably happens to a lot of people, and I know there's a lot of people out there that can relate with that. So how much is a kid actually absorbing whenever they read something? How much is a student on any level, not even a kid, absorbing when they read something, right? Okay, now, that's fine. That's how it's going to be. They're going to absorb so much, 20%, 30%, 60%, 80%, 95%, whatever. And then they're going to come to class, or what we want to happen, or what helps this learning process, which can't happen when a kid is sitting in front of a computer and taking a test and stuff, is that they need to have this discussion about what they've learned with other people. And that doesn't have to be a required thing. I'm just saying that that's an important part of somebody coming to an understanding of something, right? Okay, say my girlfriend, right? She's going to college for sociology. She's doing research on, she's doing sociological research, right? With her research, she's going to be reading, and she reads an article. And what does she do after she reads the article? She comes to me and she goes, Will, blah, 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 blah. Right? Talks about, oh, this is kind of relates to this, and she know, I know, you know, what her research questions are and stuff, and so she relays all this information of what she's learning. Doesn't this relate to this? And doesn't this relate to this? And she starts building connections, right? And maybe she made some of those connections when she was reading it initially, but a lot of it is whenever she's saying it out loud, it's making connections for her. And making connections she wouldn't have had unless she told it to someone. Now, before I even talk back to her, she's already made more connections, and started beginning to understand the article more than she would have if it was just her reading it and making those connections on her own. She's saying them out loud. Right now, I talk back, I create more questions, things that come from my point of view, and it's not because I'm super smart so I can help her. It's that I'm another person that has a different worldview and a different, you know, not worldview, but just a different view in general because we're different people. And so whenever I say, well, what about this, 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 right? Because I have an educational perspective oftentimes, right? And then I say those things, and then she goes, that's interesting, blah, 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 right? So she has this better understanding of this article, and she knows, because she has learned these skills, right, through her educational journey, that if she reads an article, she's going to have to, she's going to talk to them, talk about it to other people, and see what they say, and also make these connections for herself, because she knows if she says it out loud to me, she's going to make more connections and help her understand this article and how it fits into her research. And this is the same thing. My major point here is, listeners, that when Silicon Valley came to Kansas schools, and we talk about how is it good for kids to sit there on a computer and do these learnings and these reading something, taking a test, whatever, you know, they have these certain ways. Oh, okay, the computer says you're proficient, then you move on. It's different. It's different than what we normally want kids to learn. There's not a lot of applied learning going on there, right? Because another important thing is that whenever you're discussing an article with your boyfriend, or if you're discussing an article with anyone, is that you're also building communication skills. Oh my gosh. Okay, wait. Pause. I gotta get a soda pop. I'll be right back. 1 second, Dr. Pragman. Welcome back, guys. After that brief intermission, I had to get a soda pop. I'm drinking a Poppy Doc Pop, which is only 5 grams of sugar, and it's a prebiotic soda. Not a sponsor, but just wanted to shout it out there because it is what's going to be getting me through this without having a dry throat and coughing again. But to finish my last point is that people are developing, especially younger kids, right? I'm talking maybe, especially middle school. I think that there's this large there's this idea that because students mature, right? They go from being little kids to being almost adults. And we assume, I think in a lot of ways, maybe it's just me, I think a lot of people do this, maybe not people who have been in education, but people assume that kids don't, kids have all of a sudden developed their social behavior, you know, and they already know how to communicate. But the thing is, they don't, you know. The difference between a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old may be huge when it comes to how they look, right? They may be going from a complete kid to looking like almost an adult. I know when I was 13, I was like 5'11 and could grow a mustache, right? And at 10, I was a little baby kid. But how much does your, you know, communication skills advance from 7 to 9, you know, or let's say, 7 to 10, and then 10 to 13? Not that much, right? What I'm saying is you're still a kid. And especially with middle school and even high school and even early parts of college or most of college, there's a lot of communication development that needs to happen before you go out into the world and you're getting jobs and you're doing things. And a lot of that, you know, people end up learning a little too late, right? They're learning this communication skills by the time that they're, you know, 31 or something, okay? Some people, it takes a really long time because we're not properly giving people this time to critically think and learn to communicate and talk to people and ask for help and have it be awkward and blah, 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 right? And that's going to help people actually figure out what they really want to do in life and all that, which is just a side point that that's something that we're missing whenever people are just sitting there reading something, taking a test on it, then the computer says you're proficient, so then you move on from it. We're missing a lot of core parts that develop critical thinking skills and critical communication skills, and basically what's going to get you a job, and also what's going to help you figure out who you want to marry someday, and it's also going to help you figure out which car you want to buy, and it's also going to help you figure out everything in life, right? What do we want? What do we like? What's the point? Okay, people are developing that, and we got to give them chances to develop that. All right, I'm moving out a little too far. We're going to zone it back in, because that's why I think Silicon Valley should maybe stay out of Kansas schools a little bit, because I don't think that that is a complete way to educate people the whole time, right? Maybe there's somebody who needs to catch up in some area, so maybe they can spend, you know, 45 minutes a day learning some extra math through this system where they can just read it, understand it, move on, so they can get into the class level that they need to be in, so they can actually communicate with people that is the same age as them or something like that, right? There is areas where this is helpful, but you don't want to completely replace a proper, regular, socialized education with a person just staring at a screen. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how it is, right? And I know that sometimes people get education, like, I mean, the way I'm educating myself, right, is pretty much completely online. All my classes are online, right? So I'm doing the thing that I say that you shouldn't do, and I try to supplement that by discussing the things that I learn with people in real life or whatever, but more often than not, I don't think I actually do that as much as I would if I was in person actually, you know, I have people in my class and discussing with them. And discussion posts are an okay, I'm going to touch on discussion posts a little bit because we talked about improving the quality of online discussion posts in Module 2. So discussion posts are definitely a good idea for whenever you're like, oh, well, kids aren't going to talk, they need to talk. Students need to talk to, you know, engage with their other classmates like they would for a class. Discussion boards are obviously not the way to do it. I mean, like, if I'm going to really talk about discussion boards in, like, an actual proper way and be real about them, it's something that people are marking off, you know? It's something that are like, oh, you know, I got to make that discussion board. And they go, hey, John, I loved your post. I think it's super cool. When you said this, it was super interesting. And everybody's saying that, you know? I mean, I've never gone into a class. And then imagine if you went into a class and they were like, you need to raise your hand two times, ask two questions. And then whenever John says something, you need to add on to that. And then you can have all your points. You know, I'm not saying that it's not, you know, you got to have certain ways where you're going to grade people for certain stuff, right? You want to see participation so you can give them grades, right? That makes sense. But whenever you put it like that, it becomes a time for students to just, it becomes a thing that students just check off, You know, oh, I submitted that. I did that. Okay, it's done. And they're not actually going in the discussion boards and talking to people. I think, honestly, a good way to change this or improve this would be maybe having, say, a Discord channel or something where you can, like, go in. Because we have to have microphones, right? That's required part of the class, or not this class, but a lot of online classes are proctored, and you have to have a microphone, you have to have a camera, right? So I might as well take advantage of that and say, okay, you know, at one time of the week, just you, or, you know, once a module or something, you have to go in to this Discord channel and find someone to have a conversation with for 15 minutes or something, you know, and that checks you off. Which, still, you're checking something off for someone, so it's kind of like, eh. But you would get a lot more from that by actually discussing. I mean, that could be an alternative, but I think it would need a lot of work and stuff, because then you run into the problem of, like, okay, wait, now students are, like, sitting in a Zoom together, and they're like, what'd you think? I thought it was interesting. Oh, cool, me too. And then they sit there for 15 minutes and don't actually talk about anything. Which is going to happen a lot of times unless you're in higher level classes, like 300, 400 level classes, or like getting your master's degree, right? So, anyways, whatever. There's some open-ended questions there. I think that there's a lot of things we can discuss here, and this is pretty much an endless conversation, right? How do we improve discussion boards? Should technology be replacing blah, blah, blah? Where, how could we translate the billion questions here? And that's kind of just, hopefully that is some things that makes sense for what I've kind of like gotten from module 2 and how that, you know, came into what that made me think about, right? And hopefully what I thought about can help you think about something else. So we're gonna move on to module 3. We're kind of going a little slow here. What are we at, like 21 minutes? That's okay. I didn't see something that said it had to be so short, so I'm gonna keep going and keep talking about this stuff. So sorry guys, I'm a little buzzed out. This Doc Pop does have like 32 milligrams of caffeine in it, so we're flying high. I've also had a coffee and another Doc Pop today, so I'm like $13 in debt of caffeine money I've spent today, and now you're really seeing that live on this podcast. So moving on, module 3, the header here is lifelong learning about ed tech changes, right? And oh, you know what? Real quick, I actually want to go back and talk about OERs. I meant to start with that, but I didn't, because there was a module 0 that says Introduction to Open Educational Resources, which is sort of just the idea that an open educational resource is just something that you a book or a resource that's free for anyone to use, or at least free for people who are using it for education to use. And so what we had in this class, right, in Education 280, is a open educational resource called, The Teacher's Guide to Tech 2023 OER Textbook, which is like a textbook for our class, right, but it's free, and it's open, and it's out there, and it's by someone named, it's a lady called, Jennifer Gonzalez from Cult of Pedagogy, right? And I mean, that's another thing with technology, right, is that we're beginning to have these free forms of education, right? Because we've got YouTube, we've got OERs, we've got articles and blog posts and all this stuff, right? This free education out there, right? Because, I mean, anybody can just take a look at this textbook and learn so much from it, right? You don't have to go to a bookstore and spend $300. You could be some random dude or random lady or random non-binary person that comes in and says, you know, I want to learn about the guide to tech for teachers. And you can come in and learn about it. And you don't have to be a part of, you know, enrolled in a school or whatever. Which is just a development when it comes to technology, which is important to keep in mind within education, because there's this infinite amount of information that's out there that's free now, which is awesome because we got free information all around us on the internet. This is also why we have to teach our students, give them these critical thinking skills and give them the ability to figure out what's true, what's not true. How to identify sources and where is this coming from and who is this person? They said their name is Dr. Pragman, but actually they're not a doctor. They got their doctorate from a random thing online that's not actually real, and it's not actually from any credible source, and this guy, Dr. Pragman, is actually faking it, and it's all not true, and he's trying to sell me a guide to, how to become more masculine, right? That's all over the internet right now, and you've got a core part of teaching students. It's important to teach students about... teach students these, give them these critical thinking skills and this 21st century learning so they can identify these resources and not just be swept away into some pipeline of something, right? You want people to be able to make their own decisions, you know, and make educated decisions on what they want to consume, what they don't want to consume, is what someone's saying true or not true or whatever. So now let's talk about Module 3, lifelong learning about EdTech changes. I had to pause quickly there. Just wanted to review Module 3, exactly what the idea was, and essentially what we're talking about is how technology changes and how we're going to work with that in our classroom and how we're going to work with technology, how we're going to keep up with technology. And I kind of want to just talk about how what I feel like, what I feel about technology in my own classroom, how I want it to be, and how I plan to keep up with it and things like that, or not plan to keep up with it. That's kind of a wacky way to say it, but technology in my classroom, and I in the assignment I submitted in Module 3, I was reading through that, and that reminded me of a couple ideas that I don't want technology to be something that kids go, wow, we have a lot of technology in this classroom, right? This class is technology heavy. I want it to be more a part of the general things we're learning. I want my students to be constantly using technology, right? Because that's how we're developing communication skills and developing our 21st century learner skills, right? These skills get developed through using technologies, creating slideshows, working with other students to create a big document of information or whatever, editing a video or whatever, right? All these are building essential skills for the 21st century learner. And so, in my classroom, I don't want to be like, oh, all we do... Like, as an example, right? I'm taking a biology class right now, and it's super technologically heavy. We are doing, because it's online, most of the things we're doing are just, like, straight up in the computer, you know? And there's not a lot of personality touches I can make there. You know, I'm going click next, 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 next. Okay, technically I just, you know, conducted an experiment, but, you know, is it really the same as whatever? My point is that it feels technology heavy because we're not actually, like, I don't know, like, it's just not doing it right, in my opinion, right? It's not doing it in the way where what I want is for my students to be using the technology, but not be like, oh, we constantly have assignments that say, use Canva to make this, or use this to do this, or build this with an Excel spreadsheet. I want people to be using things, but not all be using the same things. I want them to be taking advantage of their own resources that they know how to use and using that, and then maybe be in a group and show other people how to use that, right? There might be a student who's very good at making music or sound design or very good at video editing, and they can help other students learn that as well when they're working on a project together, things like that. So there's a general idea of what I want. I want to keep up. Do I want to keep up with education? I think teachers have to keep up with education, right? How am I going to do that? I think that you just kind of just keep an open mind about what's going on. What's the new iPhone do, right? What are the new educational technologies that are coming out now? You know, if you just kind of like give that a Google every once in a while, maybe have a podcast you listen to once a month. Maybe you watch the TED Talks that just came out this year, this month, or this season, whatever, right? I think if you keep up with those things and also talk to your fellow teachers and talk to your principals and things like that, you can keep a good you can keep a good knowledge about the general technology that's happening now so that you're on the same level with students so you can actually teach them how to use this stuff, you know? Because Canva, I don't know. I didn't know how to use Canva until just recently, right? And if I had graduated 2 years ago, which technically I could have if I did all my school on time, right, and finished. If I graduated 2 years ago and became a teacher, and Canva is such a important part of like so many things now. Everyone uses Canva. Would I be able to allow kids to use this software to like? Because I don't understand it. So how am I supposed to help people? You know, use the things, the programs that are available to them for free to be able to develop all these skills and things that I'm saying here, right? Develop these communication skills and the ability to be a 21st century learner. How can I do that if I graduated 2 years ago and didn't know about Canva? My point is, if you keep up to date with these things, then you're going to be able to actually develop the 21st century learner. And you probably can't do that as much if you aren't. All right. We're getting about halfway through. And I wanted to lean back for a moment, guys, and take a moment to slow down. I feel like I'm doing an interview right now, like a super long interview. This is me whenever I go into an interview. Someone's like, why would you be a good fit at McDonald's? And I go, well, I want to make sure every customer is a 21st century learner. And I'm trying to be myself here, and I'm trying not to get too, you know, like in an interview stage, if I'm just saying all the things that Dr. Pragman wants to hear, which I'm not Dr. Pragman. I'm saying the things that I truly believe, I swear. And if you really made it this deep, I can't believe it. You got to be the most hardworking professor ever, because I don't think any professor would have made it this deep into a podcast that a student made, because I think you have like 28 students. So just want to take a quick break there. Keep my opinions being mine. I don't want to say anything that's what other people want to hear, because I want to talk about my journey of technology with education, because so far I'm keeping it real, and I'm going to keep on keeping it real with Module 4, which is educational hardware and software, which I kind of just want to touch on lightly, because I want to get to some other stuff and talk about it for longer. And also I kind of already talked about this, because I think this is, let me check here. I think this is when we were, yeah, this is the presentation I made about Canva, ChatGPT, and Blogger in the classroom. And I think we just basically talked about how to use this stuff in your classrooms, right? And like I was saying before, you have to understand the stuff if you're going to teach it to your kids, right? And by your kids, I mean your students. What free technology is there out there right now that you can use to, or that you and your students can use to complete projects or do fun assignments, right? That's a question I think every teacher should keep in their head constantly. And because especially now, and if there's anything this class is teaching, I think it's that teachers have to be keeping up to what's out there right now that can help them teach, right? Because teaching's a really hard thing, and like with being a lifelong learner, that's a big thing that that MCC talks about a lot, that in your education classes, and I'm sure that it's a thing that's out there in a lot of other places, but I haven't seen it, but I haven't necessarily seen it directly with those words, but generally a lot of people talk about you want to be a lifelong learner. Whenever it's in education, you want to be learning constantly. And a lifelong learner is a buzzword, right? This just means you want to always be developing so you can be better, you know? Not only a better teacher, but a better everything, right? A better whatever, just a better version, not even a better version of yourself, but that's what happens every day is that you wake up, you experience things, and those help you develop your whatever skill, you know, in your life. And that's, you know, when you're 31, you're going to know more things and experience more things than when you were 21. And so being a lifelong learner, to me, especially with education, is that you're constantly experiencing things. And that's going to develop the way you teach, right? with education, it's going to develop the way that you teach. It's going to develop everything in your life, right? But it's going to develop the way you teach. And when you're teaching, 1 year is not going to be the same as the next year. And the next year is not going to be the same as the next year, right? And you're going to have good years and bad years probably, right? You're going to have middle years where you learned a lot, and you're going to have good years where you didn't learn anything. And then, you know, like there's going to be all kinds of things going on, right? So, but what is important is that, let's say that I've been a teacher for the last 30 years, right? I had a really good run from 95 to 2000 because I used these technological whatevers, right? Say, let's say this, right? Right now in my life, I teach kids robotics. I work a part-time job where I do an after-school program where I show kids how to use EV3 Lego robotics, which is just little motors and little computers, and you put some Legos on it, and they drive around, and they have sensors and stuff, right? Which is super cool and relevant right now, you know? But I might be a good teacher from 2000 to 2005 because I used EV3 robotics, but then guess what? They're outdated, you know? And maybe you had a great way of teaching, is my point. This is the general point, is that maybe you have a great way of teaching from 2000 to 2005, but then all of a sudden, if you keep teaching what you taught from 2000 to 2005 and 2006 to 2010, you're not going to be a very good teacher anymore all of a sudden. Because your method shouldn't define the method you have for a certain amount of time being successful needs to develop to continue to be successful. Because not only is every year you're getting better, but every year you have to change and adapt. It's not just getting better, it's adapting to the next thing, right? And that's why maybe a second year teacher, if they have a couple of the general things locked down, might end up being way better at educating students than a 30-year teacher because they didn't adapt to what was going to happen the next year. And I think that's kind of what lifelong learner means. And also, that's what I'm saying. I basically just went back to Module 3 to discuss Module 4. But what I'm saying is that when it comes to like these softwares and hardwares that we're using, they're ever developing and ever adapting. We have to ever adapt to what's coming in the future. And keeping up on what's going to be the next thing that students can use, and you have to understand it so you can help them use it. And I think there's all kinds of things that are out there right now that if you're a teacher, you should probably check out, like Canva. Most teachers use Canva, but also there's a free editing software. I forget what it's called, but I mean, in almost every class, if you do projects ever, even probably in a math class. If you ever do projects, it probably is helpful to understand how free editing softwares work so you can help students utilize that if they decide to, if they're going to do a project, right? So, that's kind of my general point in Module 4. And now I'm just really crossing my fingers hoping that I'm actually doing this assignment right, discussing everything I've learned in the class so far. And go to Module 5. Module 5, it's flipped, blended, and online teaching and learning. This is where we kind of got into the Cult of Pedagogy podcast. And we get into podcasts, right? Which is what I'm doing right now. And which I think our basic discussion was like there's a billion different ways to learn. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a billion different ways to learn with education. Flipped, blended, and online teaching and learning. Like all these different ways you can merge things together. Which is where we talked about HyperDocs. Which I want to talk about, because I was super hyped on the HyperDocs. Pun intended. So I think I'm trying to think what part of this flip blended online teaching and learning do I want to talk about. I think the main thing I want to talk about is probably HyperDocs, but also partially mentioning some other things. That it's sort of like how I view this is the resources a teacher gives to their students to make their class better, right? Technological resources oftentimes, right? But it doesn't have to be. But most of the time it's going to be, right? Because you're normally not assigning students work in a physical manner. Normally it's going to be digitally somehow, right? Like, check your Canvas. There's an assignment in there, right? We talked about something today. Okay. So, HyperDocs are a super awesome resource you can use to make your class better. And what's more important than HyperDocs is the why on HyperDocs, right? So HyperDocs are going to be this thing that basically has a bunch of information, about, okay, like, I'm going to go to the one I made, right? I made one about haikus. And basically what I did is I said, okay, what information can I give to students to make learning haikus, like, assign that, but also give them this hyperdoc that has links to things where you can look at this and get a way better idea of what you need to do for the assignment or just what the assignment's about or whatever, right? So mine's about haikus. So I give, I start out with, a haiku is a snapshot in time. There's no mystery. It is exactly as it reads, right? Which I think that I took a quote and partially edited it to say that, which is a great definition of what a haiku is. Now you read that, you go, okay, I kind of get what a haiku is, or at least it puts you in the mindset of where a haiku is. And then I put a YouTube video that explains it. Okay, now you should know, right? There's one way, but just in case the YouTube video doesn't give you a complete idea, I go to the next one where it's going to show you, there. It's like the explore area, where it shows you a bunch of different ideas of what a haiku is, or maybe I'm wrong. What I put here is, do you remember what a syllable is, okay? Because one thing I will stand by till I die in teaching is that it's crazy, which you can't always do this, but it's crazy kind of to assume that every student is up with the terminology of everything, right? And I was homeschooled until eighth grade, and so I didn't have the typical, I mean, and it's not just because I was homeschooled, but like, say you go to a different school and then transfer to a new school, right? Or maybe you move from state to state, the expectations of what you know at fourth grade is different, you know, or fifth grade or sixth grade or whatever grade you change schools. The expectation is different. Also, some kids get through a lot of grades and don't learn certain things, right? So to even say like ninth grade or 10th grade or freshman year of college, like, yeah, you'd probably assume everyone knows what a syllable is, you know? But if you just go like a haiku is this, and you have this many syllables here, this many, it's five syllables, seven syllables, then five syllables, there you go, make one. There's a chance for confusion there. And the point of a hyperdoc is to hit all these different places, right, in the student's mind, so that happens less, where a student goes, what? Because you want them to know what's going on. So my point is, I'm all over the place, but I put, what is a syllable? A definition of a syllable, which, you know, could be helpful for a first grader, right? But it could also be super helpful for an eighth grader and a ninth grader and a freshman in college. And if you're getting your master's degree, you probably should know what a syllable is. But anything before that, it could be still helpful, right? Okay, boom. Oh, yeah, that's a syllable. I guess I knew that, you know? But when's the last time you heard someone tell you what a syllable is, right? Like us right now, if you're listening. When's the last time someone said a syllable is an uninterrupted segment of sound, which is formed by the opening and closing the mouth to form vowels? You go, oh, yeah, I guess that is what a syllable is. I haven't thought about that since I was in second grade, you know? And if you're talking about haikus, you want to throw that in there, right? And lots of people, maybe they just skip over it in the hyperdoc, but whatever, it's there. That's what the hyperdoc's for, right? Then I put the haiku format, and then I give an example, and I underlined the syllables, right? And that's like what? So I'm giving the format, I'm showing the format, and I'm highlighting where the syllables are, so people that just learned what a syllable is, they also get an example of what some syllables are. So now you got the definition of a syllable, the definition of a haiku, the format of the haiku, the format of the haiku shown in an example, which reinforces the definition of a syllable. And then I give a link to inspiration. And I formatted this in a very, like, probably like third grade way, where this would probably be really helpful to a third grader, because all the font's really big and plain and exciting. And then I linked to a website that has like 50 of the like most famous, haikus. And then explained, why a haiku, right? So now a kid's going like, well, why do I have to do this? And then you kind of just give, okay, poems are some of the shortest ways to tell a story and express creativity. Haikus give us a structure to make a poem. Easy, whatever. We're doing poems, right? Why a poem? Because you can express creativity and tell a story, and haikus are a really simple way to do it. Boom. And then I said, use Canva. Okay, so we're getting the technology in there. I know how to use Canva, so I can show my kids how to use Canva, my students, right? I can show my students how to use Canva and make this, and, I mean, third graders could probably do this, an eighth grader could probably do this, an 11th grader could probably do this, and it would probably be helpful for all of them for a lot of different reasons, right? And then I moved on to the share portion, which is like, okay, we're going to have an art gallery. We're going to ask these questions. Here's some questions. Can you think of any other questions? Yada, yada, yada. All right. I want to kind of get over that. The point of the HyperDoc is that I'm hitting the educational, what am I going to say? The educational dark spots, right? My lessons dark spots, okay? I could sit there, stand up in the front of, you know, 20 students or 18 students and be like, hey, this is what we're doing. Okay, one kid's on his phone, you know, and hiding it. I don't even know, right? Another kid is staring at me, but he's absent-minded. Three of the kids understand 100% what I said. Some of the kids, oh, say there's a kid who's speaks English as a second language, and they didn't get everything that I said, right? There's a lot of reasons why you can't expect students to hear every single thing you say or understand every single part of the assignment just because you said ABC in the class, right? What a HyperDoc does is it hits the educational dark spots, the spots that didn't get hit, the spots that are missing from what you said for the kids that were listening, right? Did they get 10%, 20%, 30%? Say they got 60% of what you said. Now they can go to the HyperDoc and get the rest of the 40% or 30 more percent or whatever to fill in the holes of the things they didn't understand or didn't hear or whatever. And that is why I think a HyperDoc is important. And that's why I think using resources for your class, technological resources, because they're going to be technological, right? They're going to be technology resources. You're going to be having the resources are going to be online most of the time and digital, because that's how our world is now. And it helps complete the idea of the assignment. And that helps students actually get the chance to learn. That helps students actually be successful, right? How deep are we're like 45 minutes in now. Wow, 47. Okay, moving on. Let's speed up a little bit, maybe. I thought it was going to take like 20 minutes. Module 6, we talked about technology for diverse learners, which I think, yeah, we talked about how technology can help people that, you know, English is a second language, people that are blind, people that are deaf, people that have trouble writing, people who have whatever disability or issue, ADHD, dyslexic, right? Technology can help them. And I guess I don't want to go over this too much because it's kind of straightforward. It's basically, there's a lot of ways that technology helps people learn, not only because of all the other stuff I've said so far, but because, you know, the computer can read out loud the text so they can listen to what they're reading. And, I mean, like, I use that, you know? Like, that helps me. And why? What disability do I have? I don't know, dude. I just like it, you know? I just like to hear it while I read it. And that's helped me study, right? When I was really bad at studying before, I used some technology. This is true. I used some technology where I have read it out loud to me. Like I did it for a script I had to read, right? I had to read this script, like a play. And then I read it while listening to it, and I did it in like 20 seconds, where, not 20 seconds, but like however long it takes to read the whole thing, you know, like, I don't know, let's say three hours, right? Where if I didn't have that, I would have heard a lot less of it and only kept like 30% of it or something, while also I just lost my train of thought. But my point is that it's been really helpful for me to do that, and it's going to be helpful for your students to have these things, and so you want to integrate them, and that's something that I'm always going to keep in mind, especially if there's someone struggling for some kind of reason, right? Because a lot of times, dyslexia or whatever, issues with reading or issues with whatever, anything that holds students back, like, a lot of that stuff goes undiagnosed or isn't going to be like, it says it next to their name on a piece of paper, this person has ADHD and they need a paraprofessional there to blow. Like, you're just going to have students that struggle with certain things, and you have to use these resources that we have, right? Like the ability for a student to listen while they read and all the other many, many different things. You want to be aware of them and also use them when you need to, I guess, is what I'm saying there. So let's move on. Module 7, which Yeah, okay. So module 7, and then we got module 8, which is the one we just did, which I got a lot to say about because I just went over it in my head, like, this week. Module 7. How technology can help improve education in 6 ways tech can improve education. That's an article we did. And the header here is technology for formative and summative assessment. Oh, man, do I got a lot to say about this. Which, I just killed all my time, basically, unless I want this thing to be like an hour and a half. But I think that formative and summative assessments are something that need to be looked at and thought about. And because it's one of the most incredibly important things in the way our education is set up. Because it's how you prove you learned something, right? Because we went, okay, we're going to teach kids, right? Or we're going to teach students, whatever. You teach students something, and then you go, how do I know they actually learned it, right? Like I was saying before, what if someone's texting and you didn't know? What if someone's looking and listening, but not actually listening, right? Okay, formative and summative assessments are how you're going to define, I know my students are learning, right? And there's different ways we need them to learn. So if you're teaching in a public school district, I've heard that it's really important to have students be able to, like, you're going to have pressure on you to have, like, if I'm teaching English, there's going to be pressure on me, like, say I'm teaching English in high school. There's pressure on me to have students perform well on state tests because I think most of the time that has some to do with how you how much money your school's going to get and whether it's going to get funding or whatever. And maybe not just that. Maybe it's just pressure on the principal and the way he gets his bonus is that the students do well at his school. And because of that, he puts a bunch of pressure on you, which then if you don't perform well, maybe you don't get your bonus or whatever. Which is not all about money, but the thing is there's going to be pressure there. You're going to have pressure on you to have your students perform well on state standardized tests, right? So, in my head, I feel that if you teach students in a way that's optimizing HyperDocs and all these other things I've talked about, not just technology, but just all these other things that I'm saying, you know, allowing certain flexibilities, letting students who like to listen to something listen to it instead of read it or whatever, then that hopefully would therefore then, compared to a very typical sit and listen to me teacher, hopefully the students would get more out of it and would just do better on standardized testing. But one thing I think you do need to occasionally do, not for a grade, formative quizzes and testing that kind of give you a general idea of where your students are testing in a standardized way. And that's helpful to see. Just am I doing a better job to make these kids learn better on a standardized test? And I think honestly they would, especially if you're developing all these critical thinking skills and things like that. They're gonna do better on a test because what is a test but a bunch of critical thinking skills basically. Because the better if you're really good at critical thinking and you're terrible at or you don't really know much about the information that's on the test, you'll still do better than someone who doesn't know a lot about the test and is bad at critical thinking skills, or doesn't have a lot of critical thinking skills, is a better way to say it. So, kind of lost myself there, but that's why quizzes and things like that are important, and why I think, hopefully my students will do better on state standardized tests and things like that, but also, the other point is, away from standardized testing, is how I'd actually do my grades for my students. And I want my formative and summative tests. I wrote about this. It is basically just, I want to do a lot of projects and a lot of communication, a lot of use of creativity and technology, right? So video editing, Canvas, making this, making that, building a diorama, painting a picture, within the context of whatever we're learning, also hopefully in smaller groups, presenting a lot of the times, critiquing each other's work, critiquing each other's things, understanding like those building these skills that it takes to do all those things will just build being a 21st century learner, right? Having to stand up there and present something, not having to stand up there and present something, but building a classroom where it's not scary to go up and have to present something. No, this isn't for a huge grade. Or, if you just stand up there, you get 10 extra points. Or, if you stand up here, the whole class claps for you and nobody's judging each other, right? Which, I mean, to guarantee that's crazy. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of work from me to try to make sure that build a vibe in the classroom that makes it supportive for each other. But I think doing summative and formative testing the way that I'm talking about, project heavy, like I said, it would help build that, right? There's going to be more... It'll be chill, you know? The vibes will be right. The students will be able to hopefully talk to each other and not feel super judged, you know, not feel super worried, right? You don't have to have this, like, oh, I forced these two kids to be together. One of them's a slacker and one of them's really cares about their grade. And now one of them hates the other one. It's like, you're stupid. You don't work on anything. And then, you know, I mean, what's that doing for your classroom except making those two kids hate each other? And I'm talking about like group work and stuff. Having one person's grade be based off someone else's grade that whatever, which, you know, I get why people do that to a certain extent. I'm just saying that, when you do that, that's going to hurt the classroom vibe to a certain extent. If you force a kid that really wants to get a good grade to get, you know, a worse grade, because you know that there's a student who will not do the work or doesn't have the time to do the work or whatever, you know, and I mean, that's not going to create a great vibe, right? So hopefully taking the stakes out of it, like a lot of the stakes out of it, and more being about participation and reading and writing, and maybe you don't always have to read it, creating an area where a student can come into your classroom and be like, I didn't have time to read it, you know, I didn't read it. And if a student can tell you that, I mean, just think about how good that would be for a classroom, you know, like, how good would that be for the student? I mean, he goes into his classroom and goes, I didn't read it because I was, you know, playing Fortnite all night, you know, and being honest with you about that. Because how is it better if the kid plays Fortnite all night, didn't read it, and pretends he did? You can't help him if he doesn't tell you, you know? You can't do anything about that anymore, you know? And maybe there's one or two kids, because of the guilt and shame, they don't want to lie to you and say that they did it when they didn't or whatever, then they actually do decide to turn off Fortnite and read the thing. I mean, that is a very marginal difference, and I don't think that that's gonna make for, okay, now there's two more kids that read the book, but now, you know, people are scared of me and they're lying to me. And they don't want to tell me the truth about things, compared to, like, all my students tell me the truth and none of them read it, right? I mean, I honestly think if none of them read it and they all tell you that they didn't read it, it's probably better. And I mean, this is a debate right now, you know? Like, I could have someone come at me, and I think there's a lot of points you can be made against me. I'm just more so interested in this point. And so I'm saying, oh, you know, blah, 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 this would be perfect, work fine, you know? But obviously you'd have to test it a lot. All right, I'm talking about miniature things now, and I'm going to try to move on because I'm getting stuck. So let's move on to the last thing, which is the Module 8, where we talked about social, ethical, legal, and human issues with EdTech, and the final project, which is what I'm doing right now, which is my podcast, which hopefully everyone who's listening liked, which, if it's just you, Dr. Pragman, I hope you enjoyed so far, and let me tell you about what I think about digital citizenship. After I take a sip of my Doc Pop. So, social, ethical, legal, and human issues. This is such a massive topic. You know, you could be an environmental major in college. You could be a sociology major in college. You could be a philosophy major in college, and all three of you could spend 4 years in college and just touch one part of one part, you know, like one side of this topic, and only part of that side of this topic. My point is that the idea of ethics and stuff, when it comes to, I mean, online, but just everything and the effects of what you do, right? It's such a massive, massive, massive topic that I think it's just hard to get anyone's head around it, right? And it also is, like, super philosophical on, like, I mean, like, if I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to teach my student to be this way, or I'm going to teach my students that this is how you should conduct yourself on the internet, it's like completely dependent on so many things, right? Because you can't just say, okay, this is what's right and this is what's wrong, because what if a student has a certain belief on something, right? Because a Christian and a Muslim and an atheist are going to have different ideas of ethics and a different idea of how things should be and what's okay and what's not okay, right? Generally, I think that's why you should, the ethics that you should teach are basically like, be nice to people and don't bully people and try to better yourself. You know, I think everybody could probably agree on that. But whenever you get deeper than that, it's really hard to whatever, which maybe I'm getting too deep into this. I know it's mainly this is about how it relates to technology and things, but I just want to preface by saying that it's such a big thing, and people could have so many personal moralities and things that would build into this, and make this completely different per student, per whatever. But with saying that, it's really important, because technology and the internet is everywhere, how you're going to conduct yourself on the internet, who you're going to be, how you're going to be, right? And I think that, like, what I want to do is create an open dialogue, especially, like, if I can do the thing, like I said before, where students can tell me if they didn't read something, then hopefully you're open enough to where the student can discuss something like digital citizenship. It's like, how should you be on the internet? What happens if you do this, you know? What if someone makes this Facebook post, you know, of them drinking, and then they don't get into a college? What do you guys think about that, you know? And you can have discussions like that, which will help, you know, build a culture and a community inside the classroom of what we should do, what we shouldn't do, and because humans naturally want to fit in, right, a lot of times. And if you're having an open dialogue with the classroom where you can get it to a point where the majority of the students, or all of the students, hopefully, have an equal respect for each other and for you, and you have an equal respect for them, then you can talk about these things and form opinions on these things that will be shared throughout the whole classroom. So, like, something like, okay, you shouldn't bully people online, right? Well, if you just say, hey, class, don't bully people online, then there's going to be a kid who goes, okay, I won't do it. There's going to be a kid who goes, I'm not going to do what you tell me to do. And there's going to be a kid that says, well, actually, I think bullying, blah, 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 right? So there's all these different viewpoints and stuff. And a lot of that goes unsaid if you don't have the open communication in the classroom. So I think that it's really important to have the open communication, discuss these things, and develop a proper, sensible digital citizenship and ethics to how people will conduct themselves online and with technology, and with copyright, right? Copyright's another thing. I'm going to mention that because it's part of this. So copyright is important because we're building all these things online and stuff. And if someone just takes, like, you know, say, like, some, like, Beyonce's brand new song and throws it on there or whatever and uploads it to YouTube, it's going to get taken down because you can't do that most of the time, right? Even if it's just for school or something. And so having your students understand copyright, how it works, what they can use, what they can't use, what is plagiarism, what's not plagiarism, what's building on top of something, when does art become your own? Can you take someone else's art and adjust it, and is it then yours, or how that works and things like that? Those are really important to know just within the internet, within technology, especially if I'm going to be having my classes do these big, projects, or not big projects, but just projects in general, like lots of things that they're going to be working on. And with that, that's been my podcast, guys, and especially Dr. Pragman. I'm going to upload this and send it to you. If you made it this far, thank you so much. That's super cool. If not, I didn't expect you to. It's 1 hour and 3 minutes long, but this is normally how long podcasts are, at least the ones that I listen to. But that's it. I'm going to take one last sip of my Doc Pop, and I'll see you next time. Thank you, guys, and thanks for listening. Talk to y'all next time.
Podcast Central.